He's Ken.
And she's Kim.
And we're driving in the car right... Well, I'm not driving. Ken is driving. That's why I get to start this time, because I have control of the microphone.
You're riding in the car.
I am. That's R-I-D-I-N-G. Thank you very much. I'm not riding. Some people might think I'm riding. You still have something black on your tooth.
I do?
Yeah.
Well, I'm driving.
I know.
Don't have access to good oral hygiene while I'm steering the wheel.
Okay, boy, that'll have to be edited out.
What, this stuff between my teeth?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll have to floss this recording. We think we're so funny.
We are.
Okay, so we were talking earlier today about The Bachelorette.
A program I've never seen The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. I never saw an episode of Mad About You. I never saw a whole episode of Friends. Never saw an episode of Dallas.
Okay, that's enough of your pop culture incompetence. E? You still have something black between your teeth.
I already swiped that.
Oh, my gosh. So, we were talking about how crazy that is. That The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, whatever the series at the time is, which right now it's Ashley is The Bachelorette, and she's down to the final three. Well, she was down to the final three Bachelors, which ended up being four and then two. So it was a pretty dramatic night on The Bachelorette.
It went from three to four to two?
Yes.
Where did number four pop up from if he was already out of the picture?
She had let him go in a previous program, and he just really felt in his heart of hearts that he hadn't been given a fair shot with her. He was the last one to have a one-on-one date, and he just didn't think that she had enough time to really get to know him. So he flew to Fiji to ask for one more chance.
And of course, any schmo like me can just book a flight to Fiji and just walk onto the show, right?
Well, we decided as we were watching it that it was obviously probably scripted by the producers of the program to add drama.
No.
I know, we're brilliant, aren't we?
You are.
Anyway, she was saying how she just really feels herself falling for these last two guys. Well, at the beginning, she was falling for three of them, but and then possibly four, and then she ended up falling for only two of them.
She must be scattered with bruises with all the falling she's been doing.
No, because she's been in Fiji, where it's absolutely gorgeous.
Paradise. Paradise. Paradise.
What'd you say?
Paradise.
Anyway, I was talking back to the television, which I often do, saying, of course you're falling in love with these one or two or four or however many guys there are. You're the only ones on the island in Fiji. I mean, what's not to love about where you are in your life right then, when you didn't have to make the reservations, you didn't have to pay for anything, it's all set up for you to just, all you have to do is just fall in love.
If they were the only ones on the island, who's shooting the video or doing the sound?
Now you're starting to sound like my dad, who always says, you know, those stupid reality shows, you think they're out in the jungle by themselves, who's taking the pictures? So, no, they weren't by themselves.
I didn't say that per se. Stupid reality shows, what do you think is out in the jungle taking the pictures? And
my dad doesn't talk like that either.
Well,
I know that's how I was talking.
And I don't talk like the way you made me sound, so.
Thanks for clarifying that. You still have something between your teeth.
Here.
What were you eating?
You get a better look at it now?
No. Go away.
What was I eating? Go away.
Oh, peanuts.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Panda Express.
No.
I thought it was something that began with a P.
No, yeah, it was peanuts.
Pneumatic drill.
No.
Philadelphia cream cheese.
No. No.
That's
no.
Pretty good. P, you know, Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a word from our sponsor. Fun with phonetics.
Fun with phonetics and Philadelphia cream cheese. Guaranteed to put the phlegm in your Flemish ancestry.
Okay, this is a disaster.
So what else is
new? Nothing.
What's new with you?
Nothing.
Going to yoga?
Yep. Gasp.
So, okay, yeah, you anticipated it. So how do you explain that folks say, yoga is a new age philosophy, there's nothing Christian about it, and blah, 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 blah. So go ahead. Here's your chance. Put your twist on it.
My twist?
Well,
would that be a downward facing dog or a warrior? Those are positions in yoga.
I'm not into the new age terminology, so I didn't know that. I'm razzing.
What's my twist on yoga? No, you're not. There's a lot of Christian people out there who don't think it's a good thing to practice yoga if you're a Bible believing Christian.
As you are.
As I am. But because my health was compromised about 13 years ago and I was very ill, one of the things my doctor recommended was yoga. And so I did some research and had a Christian friend tell me about at the time it was a VHS tape of yoga for beginners that didn't have all the mumbo jumbo-y stuff. It was just really a series of stretching exercises.
I'm guessing it concentrates solely on the physical benefits and doesn't veer into the spiritual, as you say, mumbo jumbo.
No, this particular one didn't. And I realized maybe after the first 2 weeks how much better I felt doing this. So I've continued to practice yoga with some regularity all of these years, and I think it makes a difference. And I think that you can take anything, you know, I could take the prescription medication my doctor prescribed to me and say that's not Christian to go to some pharmacy and get some drugs.
Well, it just proves you don't have enough faith.
Well, then maybe there's other people who don't have enough faith to believe that I could feel better by practicing yoga.
So really it's their lack of faith that's the problem then.
I think everyone has to do what they feel right in their own conscience before God. I don't have to answer for anybody else. I only have to answer for myself.
And by the way, the crack about not having enough faith, I was being facetious.
No, I understand that. I know how facetious you are.
Well, I know you do, but John or Joan Q. Public listening to this podcast might not know that.
You're right. See, I need to be a little more mindful about who might be hearing this. So forgive me if I'm coming off too one way about this. I just know what's worked for me, and I just this year, earlier this year, was introduced to holy yoga. Now, some people might think that's an oxymoron or something,
yeah,
but
or blasphemy or something.
Yeah, but you know, the scriptures talk a lot about meditating on God and meditating on his word, and that's exactly what we do for 1 hour. And it's probably the most peaceful, restorative, refreshing hour of my week.
See, the word holy really can get people tripped up. As I think we've all wrestled with that as Christians. You know, be holy as I am holy. Well, geez, I can't be holy as God is holy because I'm a flawed human being who sins on a regular basis, a sinning saint, as it were. But when you finally realize the word holy, its best definition, I think, means set apart for the plans and purposes of God. Well, heck, I can be set apart for the plans and purposes of God imperfectly. So from that aspect, sure, yoga can be holy if it's set apart for God's plans and purposes. And the way you described it, that's exactly what it sounds like.
It is. We begin and end every time together with scripture. A scripture reading or meditation, if you will, to focus our minds on while we're stretching together, and we pray together at the end. That makes it Christian, doesn't it? Oh, there I go again with my snarkiness.
Is that snarky to say it's Christian if you would put Jesus at the center of it?
I don't know.
Look, the corn is high.
Hi, corn.
Oh, shucks.
This man has a pun for almost every word in the English language.
Talk to God about it. It's holy punnery set aside for his plans and purposes. Set aside.
Oh, brother. Blah, 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 blah.
By the way, if you're hearing this and you're wondering what all the noise in the background is, that is the air conditioner in the car running, because this is being recorded in late July in California Central Valley, where it's like, oh, I don't know, 104 degrees outside right now.
Thank you for that bit of information.
Well, it would be relevant if they're listening to it in January in Vermont or something, you know, and they go, "Why's all the noise in the background?"
You're right. You're a seasoned professional. I'm a newbie at this kind of thing.
Stuff. This putting words together in front of microphone and recording device thing.
That's because they're invisible words at this point. I'm a writer, and so I can deal with words when I can see them and when other people see them, but as I'm speaking them, or as we're sitting here having this conversation, it's hard for me to visualize what it sounds like or how it's interpreted by the listener.
Yeah, A, we have to go back and listen to it ourselves and see if we made any sense at all. B, you said invisible words, although with modern technology, as you well know, we loaded into the editing software and we can see the words, we can see the sentences.
Well, we can, and I love that part. I love editing audio because it's very much like editing Salt Fresno Magazine. I can see it, and I can see that it looks better and there's more continuity when you take out the long pauses or the high peaks or whatever that is. But in the creating of it, it's hard for me. I'm not seasoned enough to be mindful of what's being heard.
Yeah, it's just a matter of doing it for years and years and years, and you have to kind of remember to steer it back to, okay, anybody might be hearing this at any time, so I always like to try to explain things that may not be common knowledge. I always try to be mindful of the fact that, you know, somebody might be listening when it's freezing cold, and not that it's real pertinent that we're running air conditioning, but, you know, people might wonder what all the noise is, that's all.
And I would have never even thought of anybody wondering what the noise was. Because I can't really hear it because I'm sitting in front of it and it's keeping me very cool because it is very hot out there.
It's at least 104, I heard the radio guy say.
Oh, well, I saw it on the Rite Aid marquee as we were driving up the street.
I was the radio guy I was referring to. 104.
Oh, right. Thank you, radio guy.
And Rite Aid, for those listening outside of California or where there happen to be Rite Aids, it's a chain drugstore. It used to be called Payless, but now it's Rite Aid, spelled R-I-T-E. As we further bastardize the English language and spell everything incorrectly, R-I-T-E, right. But try to pull that off on Words with Friends on your iPod. It's going to say,
sorry, that's an unacceptable word.
Yeah, but you can play words that you don't even know are words that count as words.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, or when you're playing Scrabble on the iPod, right? And the teacher face down at the bottom. You know about the teacher face, don't you?
No, I don't. I don't have an iPod that I play Scrabble on.
Why?
Because I'm not as high-tech as you.
Yeah, you're not as high-tech as me. You've got an iPhone.
Come on, you didn't play along on that one.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Sorry.
I was trying to make it so that you could explain it to people who don't have one.
Okay, well, yeah. Anyway, when you play Scrabble, you can choose the option of having the teacher at the bottom. You play your word, and then if you ask the teacher what they think, they'll show you, you know, they'll either give you a big smile to let you know you scored just about as many points as they would have, or you'll get kind of a noncommittal nothing look, which means, okay, you did okay, but you could have done better, or you get an absolute disgruntled look as if to say, You boob, you played 3 points when you could have played 167 points, and it'll show you the word. And, of course, inevitably the word they play, I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, uh-huh. Flugelmumph, yeah, everybody knows that one.
You don't even have enough tiles to play a word like that.
Well, if you put it in conjunction with other tiles, you could pull it off.
Ah, conjunction, junction. What's your function?
I have an unction.
More points in Scrabble. We've got to keep the teacher smiling.
Keep the teacher smiling.
It seems like there's more traffic this time of day than when we leave later, doesn't it?
It does kind of, doesn't it? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe by the time we usually leave, everybody is where they're heading, where now they're still heading there.
Yep, maybe so.
That's Headley. Headley.
I see there's gas food up ahead.
Gas food? Yes, gas food. Lane closed and road work next 6 miles.
No, I'm thinking gas food. Like they got a big pot of beans there or what?
That's Headley from the same movie, Blazing Saddles, right?
I have no idea. I've never seen the movie.
Oh.
Truly. I'm not asking you to play along on this one. I've never seen that movie.
Wow. Okay. There's a famous campfire scene.
Heard about that.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. You've heard about it. What's funny is, you know, it's not profane or filthy or anything else. It's just very bodily function oriented, the scene in question. The cowboys, you know, they're all having beans for dinner. What happens when you have beans? Okay, right. And I've seen it on television to where they completely remove all of the sound effects. And so you're wondering, what's going on? Why are they behaving the way they're behaving when you can't hear the noise? It's really quite silly.
I imagine it is. So let's talk about this highway that we're on.
Okay.
I've been driving out to Dinuba for 7, 8, almost 9 months.
Let's see, August, September, October, yeah.
And
wow.
Up until about a month ago, it was moving along very slowly, but now they've been pouring concrete, seems like by the mile, for the last month. Like maybe before it gets to be the foggy, rainy season, we'll be able to drive on a divided 4-lane highway.
Woo-hoo. The famous Kings Canyon Road, the road that links Fresno, California, the fifth largest city in California, the most populous state in the Union, to the famous Kings Canyon and Sequoia National Parks.
Which are beautiful places to visit, by the way, especially this time of year. You can escape the heat of the Central Valley and enjoy the fresh air with the big trees.
The cool thing about Kings Canyon, you know, like I say, the big trees and everything, but if you snake down, you can only do this, and you can't do it in winter months because the road is closed, but you drop down into the canyon, literally Kings Canyon, into Cedar Grove, and where was I going? I don't know. I was on my way down the hill. I forgot where I was headed.
Maybe it was too snowy and you ended up at the bottom in a big round ball.
I was heading down into Cedar Grove for something. There's something cool about heading down there. Oh, I remember now. Yeah, they say Kings Canyon is like Yosemite without the crowds, because you get down into Cedar Grove and you get to the end of the road and there's like giant granite, you know, walls around you, and much of the same beauty you'll find in Yosemite is at Kings Canyon. But of course everybody heads for Yosemite, and you'll usually find very, very light crowds at Kings Canyon.
Well, I'm going to take note of that. We, for the first time, bought an annual pass to Kings Canyon Sequoia. So we'll have to go up there and drive. I've never seen that part of the park before.
You've never been down into Cedar Grove?
Not that I can recall.
Yeah, it's like you get up to the top of Kings Canyon, you know, where the visitor center is and everything, and then you head towards Hume Lake. And as you're heading that way, eventually the road just drops down and serpentines and snakes down into the canyon. And it's quite spectacular.
Very spectacular.
I have to check that out.
And you go to the right time of year, and the Kings River is running right alongside the road. There's a Boyden Cavern is down there. You can tour the cave down there. And it's quite something to behold.
Wow, I'm going to have to do that, and then I'll have to. We'll have to talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah. That'd be good.
Take me along with you, and I can sit in the back of the RV describing the sights I see as we go.
You could. Yeah, right. Like, I'm going to invite you so you can do all the talking.
Well,
think again!
Well, and your RV sleeps, too. That would be you and your husband.
Yes.
I guess I'd be out on the ground or something.
Well, no, Kings Canyon is close enough. It's a day trip. We could just make it a day trip.
Okay.
We've done that before. That's why we got the annual pass, thinking that when my husband can't tolerate the heat anymore, we have a place, you know, roughly an hour away from home
that's
much cooler and way more beautiful.
Yeah. So are you inviting me then?
No, I think you invited yourself. So you could be the tour guide. Hey, that would be a good job for you.
I told you I checked that out one time way back in the 70s, made a day bus trip down to Mexico from Southern California, supposedly to train for the job, but there was something funky about the job that I ended up not taking it.
Well, I think it's something you should consider in your future years.
My golden/sunset years?
No, I didn't want to say that. That sounds depressing. Look at all the traffic backed up.
Yeah, look at that. It's
all the silver and white cars.
Yeah, the white silver car brigade and trucks. Yeah, they're all heading east from Fresno. Doesn't look like this at like 5:30.
Not at all.
And
you know what, though? We don't come this way. We usually bail off of here because of the traffic.
Yeah, that's right. Today we're headed to corporate to drop off some all-important affidavits.
I'm not sure we want this recorded, do we?
Hey, it's our podcast. I didn't say what corporate. I didn't say what affidavits.
Just so long as we don't put it on any of the machines over there. We don't want it to be traced.
No, we don't want it to be traced. We want people to draw it by freehand.
Is that all?
Any other topics? You said you had a dash earlier about what was your dash?
Oh! I'd really like to write it instead of just say it, though.
I just thought if you recorded it, you would like prompt your memory when you wanted to write it.
It will. It was about the prayer releasing our son. Now that he, well, when he became a young adult, before he went overseas with YWAM in 2009.
Uh-huh.
I'm practicing my microphone handling skills.
That's good. I'd kind of taught them to you before we were supposed to head for the Movie Guide Awards, which we never got to because of inclement weather, but we watched videos of people working the mic, and I go, look at them. Excuse me.
I'm taking the mic away. Are you done?
I'm done. I say, look at them. See what they're doing? They ask the other person a question, and then they hold on to the microphone to themselves and don't point it towards the person that they asked the question of.
They don't have as much practice as you do, Ken. You've done this for, you know, a couple of weeks.
3.5, to be specific.
No, how many years? When was your first year in radio?
1983. I was a late starter.
Well, you don't have to clarify that. Nobody listening knows how old you are.
Okay. Yeah, I began when I was 2.
He probably could have, but I don't think that's true. You started in radio the year before I got married.
Wow. Yeah, I started it, and there was no looking back. And a couple of times I said, forget this, I'm getting a real job. And all the doors closed, so I stayed in radio. Yeah, I've been doing it almost 30 years.
Almost.
Almost.
That's something.
It is. It's been, you know, it can be a cruel taskmistress at times. It can be awful at times. Other times it can be wonderful. There's times where the people you're working with or the people you're interviewing or the places you're going, you go, wow, they're paying me to do this. And then there's other times where, well.
Yeah, there's other times. We're not going to give life to those times.
You hid the black dog from me.
The black dog died. Little over a month ago, the black dog died. But I think you were feeding it up until maybe 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago?
Something like that.
And I think you still throw him a bone occasionally.
What we're referring to is the old, allegedly a Native American adage that, you know, what you got the white dog and the black dog, which dog do you want to be stronger, the good one or the bad one? I'm not going to distinguish which is good and which is bad, but, you know, whichever one you feed the most is the one that will grow bigger and stronger. So what do you want to feed? Thoughts of defeat and depression and insecurities, or thoughts of, hey, you know what? Things are tough, but I can overcome this.
I think that faith has to come into play a little bit when we're talking about the black and white dog. And more specifically, the black and white dog we're talking about are the two magnetic dogs that sit in your workspace. And before I left for Argentina, I took the black dog.
You stole my black dog.
That's because I was tired of you feeding it and making it bigger and and you falling more under its dark shadow.
Which is not an easy thing to do since it's a tiny little figurine.
Well, you seem to manage it, though. So, which dog do you think most people feed?
Wow. You know, it probably depends upon the individual. I would say, if I had to hazard a guess, I'd say most people are probably somewhere in between.
The gray dog. Enter the gray dog.
The gray dog. I would think that most people are not just super positive in their life. You know, there are people like that, but I would think they're not a majority. And I would, by the same measure, think that the people that are super depressed in their life, they're out there too, but they're not a majority. Everybody else is just kind of somewhere in between, you know? It's like, well, life could be better, but life could be worse.
I think you're probably right. And I think that there's all different shades of gray dogs out there. I think some are whiter. And, you know, I wonder if it's, this is interesting, if the gray dogs, the longer the person has them, if they get lighter because they're reflecting more positive things in their life, kind of like when we interviewed the couples that have been married 50 years or more.
Yeah.
And every single one of them, what did we talk to? 5, 6, 7 different couples married over 50 years. This was back in February at a retirement. Yeah, Valentine's Day. At a retirement community, and it was really interesting to me, Ken, to ask them what the most difficult season or time in their marriage was, and every single one said, we never really had hard times. And I wonder if that's because in the light of reflecting back on 50 plus years of sharing life with this one person, that in retrospect, everything looked better than it had at the time.
Yeah, that's interesting, since you said all of the couples have been married at least 50 years. There was one couple, hadn't they been married like 70 years?
Yeah, I think 72 years they'd been married.
So to say that, you know, they had been through, basically they were married during World War II, you know, in that period of time. And yeah, I don't know, maybe it's just, is that the kindness of God over time? He minimizes in our memories the painful, rough parts, and we remember the better stuff?
I think that's possible. I think the possibility probably also exists for the majority of us that have proverbial gray dogs, that there are few whose dogs become blacker as they get older because they become, well, they live in pain, or they become more cantankerous, or they've had their heart broken one too many times, or one too many bad things has been said to them or done to them. oh my, we've got a traffic jam.
Welcome to California. You mentioned the people who their dogs become darker over time. I think another key is people who, because of all of those painful experiences that you mentioned, they retreat and they become isolated. And man, oh man, oh man, if that isn't the sheer prescription for getting crazy and not in a good way.
Well, I think also we know as believers that isolation is the enemy's first line of attack. As soon as he can isolate one of us from the rest of the fold, we're much more vulnerable, we're weaker, we don't have the connection and the strength in numbers.
Looking at it from a Christian perspective, if you're all by yourself, A, you do not have the opportunity for somebody to bless you, speak a word of encouragement to you, maybe physically bless you, pray for you, and B, you're not in a position to do anything for anybody else either. Because that's what the Christian walk is all about. We're not supposed to do it all by ourselves.
No, it's very true. We're Christ's body, supposedly. There's people like us who are ears and mouths, and there's other people who are feet and hands and eyes. I think of the visionaries and those gifted with service and other things. So everybody gets robbed. And you know, if we go back to the dog illustration, I wonder if those who end up disgruntled and despairing and alone, if their dog just dies. And that's sad for everybody.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, we're trying to merge onto the freeway. That's the new sound introduced in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just bumper to bumper traffic here.
There's nobody, even though I've got my truck seat. Well, one truck let me in. Okay.
Thank you. God bless you.
Sir, he waved back. Yay.
Very nice.
Somebody took pity on me. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice that I wasn't cussing with the recording going on?
It was very nice. Thank you, Ken.
You're welcome, Kim.
It's not like you cuss all the time. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about, can you be a Christian and cuss?
Well, you know my theory, and I'll go ahead.
Go ahead and share that with us.
My theory is, okay, yeah, most obscenities are culturally conditioned. You know, whether it's the big words, the S word, the F word, things like that. Now, I firmly believe there are some words, like when you're using God's name in vain or in a profane way, that crosses all borders, that crosses all boundaries, all cultures. I mean, if you're profaning God's name, you're profaning God's name, no matter what country you're in, what culture you're in. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that, and I mean, that's pretty basic, I think, even and scripturally sound. But what do you do with the verses that some people talk about that, you know, the words from our mouths should be, you know, beneficial to the hearer and fruitful and encouraging and all those kind of things? So when you're using profanity, how is that a good reflection of Christ in our lives?
Well, I didn't finish my theory.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Go on.
That's okay. Then you can nail me with that question afterwards.
Okay. I'll try to remember it.
Okay. You got your hammer in hand there? I see it. Okay, good. Bang, bang. Kimmy Silverham. Good thing we can edit this. But anything short of that, what is considered a terrible swear word maybe in American society or Western civilization, in other cultures means absolutely nothing. And I've used this theory a lot of times. It's not a theory, it's a fact. I think even to today, having lived in Australia in the 1960s and talking to Australians fairly recently about this, the word bloody, for instance, where over here in America, it's like, what's the big deal? But in Australia and maybe other countries, maybe the United Kingdom, I don't know, but it's considered a terrible profane swear word. Actually, somebody told me, who really wasn't a Christian, they said it because it refers to the blood of Christ, and maybe that's why bloody is considered to be such a profane word over there, because you're using it in a very offhanded way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting, when we were in Argentina, we were talking about, I don't remember the context, but somehow or another, those of us on the team who spoke English were talking about having a discussion about something, and our translator was translating as we were speaking, and the faces on our Argentinian friends, I couldn't understand what was going on. So then our interpreter explained to us that the word discussion has a very negative connotation in their country or in their community. So the word she ended up using, I think, was more like a conversation.
And I, you know what, I'm this is just a wild guess, but I would think it's probably discussion. I think a synonym for discussion would be intercourse, wouldn't it? You know, it's an exchange between two people, you know, verbal.
Isn't a conversation an exchange between two people?
It is, but the word intercourse means more than just what people think it means 99% of the time. It can mean an exchange between two people. You could be having a verbal intercourse with each other. And so maybe that's the same thing in Argentina. Discussion might carry that weight, like it refers to something like that.
Oh, maybe so.
That was my thought.
No, I don't know. I don't know what it was. Anyway, did I derail you again? Or were you done making your point?
No, I think I was done with the point that many words are, there's cultural attachments to them. They're not necessarily internationally bad words. Now, of course, the point being, yeah, if you're in the culture where they are bad words, you just don't go and swear up a blue streak and everything, and, you know, because it indicates something's going on in your heart, you know. And I'll admit, if my toe hits the wrong thing in the dark and pain shoots up my foot, or if I smash my hand with a hammer, 35 years of living as a heathen, something still pops out of my heart and out of my mouth.
Yeah, I understand that, and I think if most of us are honest, we could probably say the same thing. We're human, we're flesh,
yeah.
And sometimes we instinctively go to that place. So I get the argument about that. We're going to have a discussion here about this, because I get the argument about they're not necessarily being universally profane words specifically. But if God knows us and who he made us to be, he knows where we live and how we live and the community we live in and the context with which we conduct ourselves. So is that displeasing, or is it maybe just heartbreaking a little bit when he hears us using words? And actually, you know, I think we could even go as far as to not just focus on profane words, what we consider, as you mentioned earlier, but the things that we say that hurt other people that maybe aren't cuss words, but they're words that kill, they're words that destroy.
Yeah, I think like anything else, when it comes to the Christian walk on this earth, this side of heaven, it's the intent of the heart. And, you know, what's the intent of the heart? Is the intent of the heart for shock value, dropping the F-bomb somewhere? Is it to, you know, prove how non-religious you are because you can still use that word? You know, and it's like, why are you doing it? Why are you saying it? A little self-examination might be in store in a case like that.
Okay, we have to take a break now.